A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 125. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television. And today we are continuing our discussion of The Woman in Black. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, The Woman in Black, a spooky ghost story, a one-off TV show, the original novel by Susan Hill, and adapted here by Nigel Neal, a well-known British genre writer who we've discussed many a time. And an interesting show for us to talk about, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. It's a classic haunted house type of story with lots of sort of Victorian ghost story kinds of traditions in it, with some good performances and some really nice spooky effects and good sound effects and things. So it's a neat one to look at.
Okay, so last time we told you a little bit about the setup of the story, and in particular about this young solicitor, Arthur Kidd, journeying from London to try and close down the estate of the late Mrs. Drablow, one of his firm's clients. And he has to stay in her isolated house, Eel Marsh House, which is cut off from the rest of humanity, really, by the sea and by the mists that sweep across this causeway that separates it from the mainland. So straight away, we're in a very spooky place.
Yes, that's right. And being at this point in the 1920s, it is cut off from all communications, and you can only get there when the tide is low, when there are these sea frets or mists that interfere with things. So Arthur Kidd can be very cut off at times when he is at this location. And he is investigating Mrs. Drablow's personal effects and papers. She has this mess of things that he has to go through in order to close out the estate. And one of the things he discovers are these old-style cylinder recordings, these audio recordings that Alice Drablow had made with the little microphone and was able to do these little recordings. And in fact, Arthur Kidd is also able to do his own recordings with it to note things down. And what is on those recordings and what he records to them becomes a sort of important device in this television version.
Yes, it is a neat device by Nigel Neal, because this part is not in the novel. In the novel, obviously, the character can actually read the letters in the novel and we can read them along with him. But for the television version, Nigel Neal came up with this clever little framing device, and it works quite well. It allows us to hear some of the story, but also for Arthur Kidd's sort of thoughts to be spoken out loud, because otherwise I think we'd run the risk of just a single man in a spooky house, and it might be tricky to tell the story.
Yes, absolutely. And we learn about the story of Alice Drablow's sister, Janet Goss, and her son. And she was at the time actually forced to give up her child for adoption. And it turned out that it was Mr. and Mrs. Drablow, so her own sister, who adopts the child.
That's right, yes. I mean, we do learn a little bit about the sort of strange and tragic history of Janet Goss. And obviously, you know, she was an unmarried single mother, which wasn't done. And that's why she has to give up her son. But she returns later on, or we hear that she returns later on, to try and get her son back. And what happened to Janet Goss and what happened to her child may be the clues to the noises and visions that seem to haunt Eel Marsh House, and may explain some of the stuff that Arthur Kidd is experiencing.
Yes, absolutely. And these tie back to things that happened probably 40 or 50 years earlier, so back into the 19th century. Now, looking at this adaptation, as we've already started to talk about what Nigel Neal did with that, it is really a reasonably faithful adaptation of Susan Hill's book. It's not perfectly faithful, but it certainly is pretty faithful.
Yes, it is good. I mean, as we said, he gets round the problem of the sort of solitary single narrator in the book by this neat device of the reading from the widow's history, from Alice Drablow's history, with the wax cylinders or the wired cylinders on this sort of primitive recording technology. He did make a few changes, though, Nigel Neal. For instance, he changed the names of some of the central characters. I believe he's Arthur Kipp in the book, whereas he's Kid here in the TV show. And I know also that some readers took exception to the fact that the sex of the dog, there is a dog in this show, and that the sex of the dog was changed for the TV series, apparently.
Yes, they kept the name of the dog, but the dog was male instead of female for some reason.
Yeah.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the time that it takes place was different. It's in the 1920s in the television version. And I'm not 100% sure about this, but I thought it was earlier in the, sort of closer to the turn of the century in the novel.
Yes, that's correct. I think that's right. Nigel Neal moves it forward in time about 20 or 30 years. Now, whether that's to say something about London or whether it's to allow him to use the recording technology, I'm not sure, but he does move it slightly ahead of the book.
It does mean that there are more cars and other types of vehicles in the world that Nigel Neal is painting rather than the one that was in the novel.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And perhaps because of some of these things, Susan Hill was reported to be unhappy with the adaptation and the changes that Nigel Neal made.
Yes, it's interesting that we do have this story that Susan Hill is not particularly happy with this adaptation of her book. And we do have this comment about Nigel Neal that he could be quite difficult about adaptations of his own work. In particular, there were stories about his difficulties with the Hammer film studios when they came to adapt the Quatermass stories from television to film versions. And he did have this slight reputation for not liking people changing things when they adapted his works, but actually he would fairly freely change names and times and so on when he was adapting other people's. So, you know, there are a few comments about this, and it is interesting to find that Susan Hill perhaps not terribly happy with it.
Yes, that's right. The original novel is very good, and the way it's written, it's a first-person narrative. So we have Arthur Kipp telling the story of what happened to him, and there is actually not very much dialogue in the book. There is some dialogue, but a great deal of it is like a monologue of the main character telling this story. And in fact, in the book, there was a framing device where Arthur Kipp, much later in life, is telling this story something like 40 years after the event or even more. He is telling the story of what happened to him as a young man because he feels he needs to write it down. He is still affected by these events and he needs to go through that process of writing it all down. And that was the way that it was framed and the story was told in the novel. So you had the two different time frames there. And that was not used at all in the television version. And that certainly had an effect on how it sets up the story in some ways.
Okay, so changes there. And of course, this isn't the only adaptation of this this book, Brian.
That's right. It has been adapted a number of times. And famously, it was adapted to a stage play. And this was adapted by the actor and playwright Stephen Malotrat. And that was for the stage in 1987. It first opened in Scarborough in about 87 in the north of England.
That's right. And then it transfers from there to London's West End, to the Fortune Theatre near Covent Garden in London. And that was in 1989, the same year as we've got this TV production. And the theatre version has been there ever since and is now the second longest running theatrical production in London after The Mousetrap, famously. So, you know, it's a very long and successful run that the theatre version has had in the Fortune Theatre.
Yes, that's right. And the play actually takes a bit of a different approach. It is a two-man play. The original cast featured John Dettine, who we talked about in The Day of the Triffids. And the way that this play is set up is that you have a younger man known as the actor and an older man who is Arthur Kipp. And it uses a framing device, not exactly like the one in the book, but you have the older Arthur Kipp wanting to tell the story of what happened to him when he was a young man, and it's still affecting him, so he's trying to work that through. And he hires an actor to tell it as a sort of little play. So what you end up with is the actor in almost a play within a play playing the young Arthur Kipp, and then you have the older character, Arthur Kipp himself, acting as the other characters, all of the other characters in the play within the play. So it's a bit of an elaborate sort of framing device, and it brings in a little more humor than you would usually expect to have in this type of play. But it does bring you some elements of that looking back type of framing device that were in the book.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it is. I think it's, although it sounds complicated, it's actually very clever, and it works perfectly for the stage. You know, on top of that, we've also got the whole production involving lighting effects and staging and sound. I think the sound and the music play a big part of it. And probably as a result, the show, you know, the success of the show has been that it is quite a roller coaster of sort of scares and bits of humour. And it's a terrific production, which actually we have been to see, haven't we, Brian?
Yes, we have.
Yes, we had a British Invaders field trip to actually see this production in the West End. And we'll talk about it a little bit more in our recommendations. But it is terrifically well done, isn't it, Brian?
Yes, it is. So here is actually a short recording of a few things we had to say immediately after we saw the production.
So, we are both here in London, and we have just watched the West End stage production of The Woman in Black.
That's right, yes. We've had a British Invaders field trip to the Fortune Theatre in Russell Street here in London, and we've seen the stage production of The Woman in Black, as you say, Brian.
Which is interesting. It's an adaptation of the original novel that was actually done, I believe, a couple of years before the television version was. And it takes rather a different approach to how it brings things into a dramatic form.
Yeah, it does. It's very clever because to get round the parts of the novel which are just narration by Kipps, they had this very clever device of having the older Kipps employing a young actor to help him recreate the story and tell the story. And so it's a two-man production. It's very quite stripped down, I think. It's just the two actors, a fairly small theatre, a fairly small stage. But they managed to do a lot with it, Brian.
Yes, they do a lot with the staging of it, which is actually quite intense at times.
Very.
And, yeah, bring some of the scary aspects of it to the fore, and bring out some of the emotional moments with the actors as well, which was quite good. It was quite well done.
It was, and we should say that we saw it in a packed theatre with a very lively and enthusiastic audience, some of whom we think were students studying for their GCSE exams in this subject. And they certainly they enjoyed themselves this evening, and there were plenty of scares and plenty of shrieks along the way.
Yes, the enthusiasm was certainly there. Now, as we had mentioned a little bit, the original novel by Susan Hill is not that long on dialogue. It has a lot of narration and a lot of sort of monologue. It's almost like a first-person monologue type of story, which in the television production that was scripted by Nigel Neal was sort of moved to more of a full cast drama format where things were played out in a very visual sort of way and very much in that sort of television style, which was certainly quite different from what we had here with this stripped down two-person stage performance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is different to the television production. It's different to the book. It's very clever. It's very well adapted for the stage. Like I say, they do go very deliberately for some emotional moments and for some very shocking and scary moments. And they use lighting, they use sound, and they use these two rather compelling performances by the actors who tell the story as if they were putting on a play. Works really quite well, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. So we get sort of these two versions of Kipps, which in a way mirror what we have in the novel, because the novel gives you the older character and a framing device with the older character looking back on these events of his younger days and wanting to tell that by writing it in the format of a book. And they sort of took that and twisted it a little bit for the stage production and made it into the older Kipps wanting to tell the story in a presentation or a performance almost. And this is what becomes the sort of stage production that you're looking at.
Yes, he's hoping that he will lay some ghosts by telling a story through a theatre production and sort of viewing experience. And I suppose the question comes, if you're in London and you get the chance to see this very long-running production, what would you recommend, Brian? Should people try and check it out if they get the chance?
I would say absolutely. It's worth watching.
It's a great show, yes. It's very intense. It is very enjoyable. Be prepared. It's a little bit of a roller coaster. It's a bit like that. There will be some dramatic moments along the way. But yes, it's great stuff.
Yes, it's definitely a different take on that story, but it's a really interesting take and it's a great show for sure.
Yeah. So if you get a chance, check it out.
Absolutely.
And I must remember to ask Kekwick to bring more of that yellow soap, so useful for washing floors. Last night, she did not come until 4 in the morning. Then it was bad. A bad night. Last night, she did not come until 4 in the morning. Then it was bad. A bad night.
Other adaptations?
There is, of course, the movie. There is a 2012 film from Hammer Studios, the new revived Hammer Studios, that, as we are recording, has opened in the theaters quite recently.
Yes, absolutely. You know, how interesting to have it back in Hammer Studios making horror films again. And this time we've got Susan Hill's novel adapted for the big screen by Jane Goldman, who perhaps best known for the Stardust and X-Men First Class screenplays. This time we have none other than Harry Potter himself, Daniel Radcliffe, playing the young Arthur Kipps in this production. And there it is. As we say, at the time of recording, it's recently been released. Possibly by the time you hear this, it may be approaching its DVD release. And again, we've been to see it, and we will talk a little bit about that in a moment as well.
Yes, it was an interesting film production, for sure. Now, there have actually been a couple of radio adaptations of it as well, and I don't know a lot of details about them. I haven't listened to any of those, but it has in fact been done for radio as well.
Yes, our Facebook page tells us, thanks for the contributions there, that it's been adapted at least twice in the last 20 years for the radio. We haven't heard any of those, so if you have heard the radio versions, please do tell us a bit more about it on the Facebook page.
Yes, I think this would be an interesting story for radio, so it would certainly be interesting to hear about that. Now, we should get into some of our own thoughts about this, the good and the bad, if you will. So, Eamon, what did you think about the television version of The Woman in Black? What did you like?
I did like the spooky atmosphere. I liked the locations and the sets and the costumes. All works very well, and it's a very atmospheric piece, I think, and it manages to build that atmosphere in a sort of slow feeling of mounting dread, much as happens in the book, I think. So I thought those parts worked well. I don't know what you thought, Brian.
I think that's a very good way of putting it, actually. The atmosphere is indeed very good, and it does sort of build as you go. I think some of the performances, and even some of the small performances in passing, there was just a very short scene with Trevor Cooper in it, for example. And you had these scenes and sequences that set the idea of what the local people think of Ealmarsh House and these types of things. And I think those worked really well.
Yes, I think we have got good performances. We've got, as we say, we've got Adrian Rawlins in the central performance, but it's always nice to see Bernard Hepton, who's a very, very sort of like good authoritative figure on screen, and he turns in a lovely performance here as really just about the only person in Crithin Gifford that that Arthur Kidd can turn to, and he is the sort of support for him and often gets him out of some unpleasant situations. And then again, we can't really talk too much about it, but Pauline Moran as the Woman in Black, you know, again, another interesting and good performance.
Yes, I really can't complain about the performances in here, and, you know, the way the sound design and the music was done. It works quite well.
It does. It all comes together very nicely. And we've got Nigel Neal's adaptation, which for all, you know, the criticisms and faults that Susan Hill may have found with it, actually, I thought it worked quite well. And I thought the way he got round the central problem of, you know, a single narrator in the book, I thought that worked very well for the television.
Yes, it did work well. I did not have too many disappointments with this, but I did have a couple. One is that I did sort of miss the framing device from the novel of the older character looking back and the idea that, you know, this was a very intense thing that would continue to affect the person for decades, you know, through most of his life. And that was something that I would have liked to see some sort of version of that, because it was so powerful in the novel. The one change that I was a little disappointed with, aside from that, was that they did move it a couple of decades later. I think I like the idea of it being a little earlier at the turn of the century.
Okay, I mean, that would fit in more with the sort of, as you say, Victorian ghost story, of which this is really a good example.
Yes, absolutely.
Anything else about this television version that you didn't like or that you would comment on?
Not really. All in all, it was really quite well done. How about you? Were there any disappointments for you?
Not really, no. I thought it all worked quite nicely. I mean, I wonder whether not having the older version of the central character, maybe that gives us more uncertainty about the central character as to whether he will survive the events that he sees. So I wonder if that's why Nigel Neal decided to get rid of that particular part of the book. But anyway, who knows? It does seem to come together quite nicely on screen. And it's an interesting production, and it's quite, you know, it's only, I think, 100 minutes, so it doesn't demand an awful lot of time to actually watch it.
Yes, absolutely. So I think that takes us neatly into our recommendations. I will start this off. The television version of The Woman in Black, I think, was very good, and unfortunately it is a little hard to get the official release of it at this point, because it's been deleted for a while. But it is a very good production, and I would certainly recommend it. I think it was very good.
Yes, I would second that recommendation. And if it was available on DVD, I think it would be a very solid thumbs up from us here on British Invaders. The only downside is the fact that it's difficult to get hold of. And if that situation changes in the future, well, then it will be, you know, you really should watch it. It's a terrific piece of television and quite a thrill ride and a scare.
Yes, absolutely. I think the original novel was also very good. I actually listened to that as the audiobook version that was available from iTunes, and I really enjoyed that. The reading was actually very well performed. And yeah, I would say the book was also very good. So if you enjoy a good ghost story book, The Woman in Black by Susan Hill is certainly worth a read.
Okay, and we've got the two other adaptations that we have seen. We have the stage play, and I think you've probably guessed already that we're going to recommend the stage play, because certainly I found it to be a terrific production, and the whole sort of sound and atmosphere and the way they stage it, it's quite a shocking roller coaster thrill ride. It's great fun, isn't it, Brian?
Yes, they definitely made the scary ghost story work on stage. It was very well done.
Absolutely. So if you get the chance to go to the Fortune Theatre, we would certainly recommend you go.
Absolutely. Now, the 2012 film, of all of these different versions, I found the 2012 film to be the weakest. It was more of a generic horror film that used bits and pieces of the original story, I felt. Daniel Radcliffe's performance was fine, but as a production, the film, I thought, was okay, but certainly not great. I would recommend any of the other versions much more than the film, for sure.
Yes, I think I'd agree with that. I mean, as an adaptation of The Woman in Black, I think the film is the weakest version because it doesn't go for that slow building atmosphere of dread in a ghost story. This is a Hammer horror film, and it's a full-on Hammer horror film with a fair amount of gore and things going bump in the night. There's even a grave to be dug up in pitch black nighttime. So if you like a Hammer horror film, then yes, you'll enjoy this version of The Woman in Black. But if you're looking for a good adaptation of the actual ghost story, I think we'd turn to the TV show or the stage version.
Yes, I think you get more of that spooky ghost story feeling rather than the more modern horror film style.
Yes. Having said that, if the DVD release of the film does mean that we also get a DVD release of the TV show, then we're all for that, I think. That would be great.
Absolutely, that would be great. So, in summary, The Woman in Black was a ghost story that dealt with Arthur Kidd, a lawyer in the 1920s, who is tasked with going to the remote village of Crithen Gifford and going to the even more remote house of Eelmarsh House, where a client, Alice Drablow, has recently died, and going through her effects and her papers becomes an important thing that must be done. But it is not the safest of places to go, as this is a haunted house ghost story. And the title character, The Woman in Black, will become involved more and more as the spooky ghost story builds up over the course of the show.
Okay, so an interesting show. And as ever, if you've seen any of these adaptations and you can comment or help us out with other details, please do let us know on the Facebook group.
Absolutely.
And of course, come back to us next time where we're talking about another British show. This time we're going to move to 2006 to BBC Four and an adaptation of a John Wyndham short story called Random Quest. Again, another interesting show for us to talk about.
Yes, and going back to John Wyndham, another favourite author of ours.
Absolutely, it's nice to get back to John Wyndham again as well.
So you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have the Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. We are also a proud member of the Geek Culture Network. So if you go to thegeekculturenetwork.com, you will find us there and other podcasts there as well. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. And until next time, this is Eamon in England saying, she's behind you.